Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, December the 5th. An absolutely beautiful day here in Dallas. It was 31 at 6 o'clock in the morning. I think it's up in the 50s now. But it's lovely. It's sunshine. And I tell you, we've had a string of these. I think you've been hearing me say it quite a bit here on the show. We've had a string of these pretty days where it's a little chilly in the morning. You might want to wear a sweater, maybe a coat. But then, you know, when you come home, it's just lovely. And go out to lunch, it's just absolutely, absolutely beautiful. Well, today we're going to be talking about President Bush 41. Maybe you had a chance to see some of the funeral events, some of the ceremony. And I was struck by something about this man. We've said so many great things about him. But I was struck about something, and that in many ways, this is the passing of a generation. And that's the World War II generation. I want to talk a little bit about that. I have a post over at the American Thinker that I want to develop a little bit. And that is, what is happening in Paris with President Macron and the future of France? I mean, I think there's some very legitimate questions about the future of France. This is not just a march. I think there's more to this. And we may very well be seeing a rebellion, a tax rebellion, sort of a French Tea Party event like we saw here in the United States a couple hundred years ago. So we'll get into that as well. But let me begin by drawing your attention to a story. I saw this morning, and there's a story coming out of Cuba that the new Cuban government, it's not really a new Cuban government. I think we have to correct ourselves. It's the continuation of the old Cuban government, but they just have a new president, or a man they call the president. He was never elected by the Cuban people. He was, of course, selected by the Communist Party. So I sometimes have a hard time calling people like that president, because to me, a president is elected by the people, and there's no such thing in Cuba. But anyway, his formal title is the president of Cuba. And they have been talking a great deal about these constitutional changes and how Cuba is going to reform and more interesting things are going to happen. We're finding out, though, that it's really not that way, that in fact, they're actually cutting back, where they're in a sense reining in, if you will, many of the small businesses. And basically what they want, what they're looking for, is more and more control of these small businesses. They want the hands of the government more in the pockets of many of these small business people. And I think you understand why. You know, they fear that if all of a sudden, you know, you've got Cubans opening up their own business, and many of them are businesses related to tourism, what you're going to have is, frankly, a lot of Cubans getting rich, other Cubans competing with each other, sharing information with each other, enjoying the wonders of capitalism. Well, once people get a taste of capitalism, the first thing they do is reject socialism, particularly the kind of socialism that they practice in Cuba, where a few people run everything and a few people benefit from everything. So it's not really reforms. And we have a post coming out about this on Thursday morning. What we're really seeing is a government sort of taking back whatever freedom they gave you. They're taking it back, and they're saying, no, not so fast. We didn't mean for you to have that much liberty and that much economic freedom. What's interesting, and in reading one of the quotes in the article, there is a Cuban lady who has her own little business, and she runs a business out of her home. Basically, what she does is she runs like a little hotel out of her home. Many people in Cuba are doing that. They're renting rooms to people who come from the United States or whatever, and they're doing that, and they're obviously, you know, they're running a small business. It's sort of like a bed and breakfast type hotel, Cuban style, because you get more than breakfast. It's really more of a hotel. But anyway, what this lady was saying in the article, which I think should concern everybody, is that what they may start doing in Cuba is getting information about these businesses, these small businesses, by simply asking questions of the tourists. For example, if they ask you, okay, you're going to Cuba, where are you going to stay? Well, I'm going to stay at XYZ residence, you know, where I have a, a room. Oh, XYZ, where's the address? And that way the government can then come after the fact and say, lady or gentleman of this house, you've been, you know, you've been making some money here with these tourists. How much money are you making? And give us our share of it. And that's what this lady was saying, that these reforms may very well be a way of getting back at some of these entrepreneurs, and they're going to get back at them by using tourists. Because when you come into a country, I mean, it's like the United States, you come here from another country and you have to indicate where you're going to go. Are you going to go to a hotel? You're going to go to a residence? I mean, it's a question of security. I understand it, particularly in these days of concern and security and so on. So what a lot of Cubans are fearing is that from the tourists who will innocently provide information, thinking they're just doing it for security reasons, that through from the tourists, many of these businesses are going to be discovered, or that, you know, they're going to find out how many people are staying and what kind of money potential that translates to. It's a fascinating little thing. And I, as I say, I have a post coming out on Thursday morning about this, and we're going to be talking more about it. I intend to do a show and more follow-up on this, because Cuba and reforms don't mix. See, what really, if you want to understand why the Cuban government is opposed to reform, what you have to do is understand that the same thing that happened in the Soviet Union. Now, in the last 4 or 5 years of the Soviet Union, Gorbachev decided to reform. But the more he tried to reform, the more frustrating it got, because a communist system is afraid of reform. They're scared to death of reform, because what you have is a small group of people who are really doing very well. And to that small group of people, reform is a threat to their survival. And that's what you're really seeing in Cuba, I think. You're seeing the Communist Party saying, hey, no way. You know, we've had it too good for too many years. We've had it too good. Also, the Castro family, by the way, is involved in a lot of this stuff. And what they're saying is, no, we're not going to give up our control over you. We want more control over you, because the more freedom and the more reforms that we give you, the more likely you're going to go out, make money, become more independent, and may even rebel and demand more freedom from the state. So interesting situation going on in Cuba, and we're going to talk about it more. But these reforms that you're hearing about, they're not really reforms. There's just a lot of hot air. How else can I say it? Just a lot of hot air coming out of a country that, frankly, is full of hot air, at least the leadership of the country is. We're going to take a little break. I want you to hear from my friend Carlos Geddes, and we'll be right back.
This is Carlos Geddes Harpies. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Tzatziki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Tzatziki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have a link to Carlos' schedule and the show information. If you click on their show description, you'll see the link to Carlos there, to his schedule. We also have a link to my friend Duke Machado, who's a car dealer here in Texas. If you're looking for a car, click on Duke. If you want to go out dancing and have a good time, click on Carlos. Well, a couple of other stories we want to get into. You know, we did a great show on Tuesday with Rosine and Michael, a couple of our good friends here in the United States, about the situation in Paris. We also had the participation of Philippe Bandour, who is a French attorney who spoke with us from Paris. And we spoke a great deal about what is happening in Paris. And I have a post over at the American Thinker about this. Obviously, Macron is toast. I mean, he's finished politically. He doesn't have any authority. He's way down in the popularity standing or in the approval standing. There is no way that he can regain the popularity. So he's toast. He could stick around, I suppose, as president. He could stick around. He doesn't have to resign. He's not required to. They don't have a vote of confidence type situation in France. So, you know, he can be around for another 3 or 4 years, which is what his term is. But he doesn't have a lot of authority. He doesn't have a He's basically holding a very weak hand at the moment, because he really made a huge mistake when he decided to raise the gasoline tax. And at the same time, then he broke down, he backed down, which means that the people marching now know that if they march more, if they burn more cars, they're going to get more things. And that could actually open up for marches more than just about gasoline tax. But the overall thing happening in France is really more than just about climate change. This is, to me, this is just the last straw that broke the camel's back. What you're seeing in France, and you're seeing this in many countries, is where you have governments that are taxing people at 40, 50, even more percent. And people are basically working to support the government. And they're not necessarily getting back. I know they tell you, well, they have free health insurance. Trust me, free health insurance or health insurance is not worth half of your salary. Not worth half of your salary. Those taxes are not going so you can have health insurance. Those taxes are going so that they can support a bureaucratic state, which every day gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and more people are working for the state. Eventually, that stuff has to be paid, and it's paid through taxes. And people are just fed up with it. They're saying, well, you know, we're working basically to support the government. You know, we don't keep any of the money that we make, and the benefits that we get are not exactly that that good for all the money that we're paying. In France, a gasoline gallon is like $6 or $7. And more than half of the money, more, like 75% of the cost of a gallon is going to the government, to support the government. And now, of course, what Macron was trying to do was to pass a carbon tax to discourage people from fossil fuels to alternative energy. The problem is that at this moment, the people of France cannot see that kind of an increase. They simply cannot pay the taxes. It's not that they don't believe in climate change. It's just that they cannot afford to pay the taxes that the government is charging. And so you're seeing really a rebellion against the administrative state. And I think it's going to get worse. There's apparently going to be a big march on Saturday, which I think will be greater than any of these marches so far. And what's interesting, these marches are coming from all of the different groups in the country. They're not just coming from the left or the right. They're really coming from everywhere, where people are saying, we're fed up with paying taxes. You know, we're fed up with paying taxes. And it's an interesting movement, and I think it's going to go beyond France, and I think it's also going to have a devastating impact on the French political class. So keep an eye. Saturday, I understand they have a big march, and we'll talk about it sometime next week. Talking about President Bush, you know, what we saw today was a beautiful ceremony with beautiful eulogies. The one by his son, President Bush, was absolutely beautiful. The one by former Senator Simpson was absolutely outstanding. But what we really saw today is, in a sense, we're saying goodbye. This is a continuing story, and we're saying goodbye to the great generation, the greatest generation, the men and women of World War II, the men who fought in World War II, in the case of President Bush. And we're saying goodbye to them. In fact, we're saying goodbye to them in every city in the country. Every morning when I look at the newspaper, there's an obituary of a World War II veteran. A man who served here or a man who served there, they're dying, of course, because they're in their 80s and 90s and they're passing on. And I think in many ways, that's what this ceremony was about. We were remembering President Bush, of course, President Bush and his great service to the country, but President Bush also the World War II veteran, the man who at a very young age volunteered to go into the Navy and fly war planes and all of that. That's what I think we were remembering. And I hope that the young people who are watching, the young people who are learning more about President Bush and the young people who are learning about the Cold War and all of these things that were talked about today at the funeral, I hope these young people go back and learn more about it, because this was such an amazing time in American history when America became a superpower after World War II. And it was the United States who brought down the communist state. It was the United States who defeated Nazis, and they did it because of men like George Bush, who we remember today. So rest in peace, Mr. President, and to all the veterans of World War II, to all of the men and women of that greatest generation, we say thank you. Thank you very much. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. We'll talk to you later.